Ever find yourself wondering just how a book, you know, actually makes its way into your hands?
It's a thought I bet most of us don't entertain that often.
Right. We open a book, get lost in the world it creates.
And yet, so much goes on behind the scenes.
It really is quite the journey. And that's exactly what we're diving deep into today, every step.
From that very first spark of an idea.
To a finished book sitting there on your shelf.
A process that's, well, more intricate than most realize.
Absolutely. And we might be surprised by what we learn along the way.
Indeed. It's easy to take for granted just how much goes into crafting a book.
So true. Let's start right at the beginning, shall we? That initial spark, that moment a writer grabs hold of an idea and thinks, this is a story.
Yes, the birth of a book. And it can unfold in so many ways.
It's fascinating to think about the difference between, say, fiction and nonfiction.
Oh, absolutely.
A world of difference.
With fiction, it might be this sudden image of a character that pops into the writer's mind.
Or the outline of some fantastical world.
Right. Whereas for nonfiction, it's often this burning question that needs an answer.
Or an argument that needs to be made. A point to prove, perhaps.
But regardless of genre, there's this mountain of work ahead to turn that spark into an actual manuscript.
A mountain is right. For our fiction writers, that means world building. Creating characters that feel real, breathing, weaving those intricate plot lines that keep us hooked.
And for nonfiction writers, that means research, research, research.
Can't forget that. Building a solid, compelling argument, backing it up with credible sources, making sure the information is accurate, engaging.
And even with fiction, research can play a surprisingly big role.
It's true. Think about historical novels.
Or those fantasy worlds with their complex magic systems. Gotta make sure the rules hold up.
Exactly. Without that solid foundation of research, it just wouldn't feel real.
And let's not forget the sheer dedication it takes to sit down day after day, draft after draft.
Refining the language, shaping the structure. It's a labor of love, truly.
It's like sculpting, almost. Chipping away at the raw material until you're left with this polished piece of art.
A beautiful analogy. And, you know, speaking of shaping and refining, that brings us to the next stage.
The unsung heroes of the bookmaking process, the editors.
Ah, yes, those masters of language.
I'm always fascinated by how many different types of editors are involved, each with their own set of skills, their own eagle eye.
It's a multifaceted process, that's for sure. It starts with those developmental editors, working closely with the author on the big picture stuff. The overall structure of the book, the pacing of the story. Is it engaging? Is it well organized? Does it hit the mark?
It's like having a writing coach in your corner. Someone to offer constructive feedback, help the author realize their vision in the best way possible.
Exactly. They're the architects, helping to design the blueprint for a strong and compelling narrative. And once the foundation is solid, well, then it's on to copy editing.
Where the focus shifts to the nitty-gritty details of language and style.
Precisely. That's where those grammar gurus shine.
Spotting a misplaced comma from a mile away. Making sure the writing is crisp, clear, and consistent.
They're masters of language, those copy editors. Ensuring the text flows smoothly, the grammar is impeccable, the punctuation spot on. And let's not forget fact-checking. Making sure all the information presented is accurate, reliable.
It's amazing to think about how technology has transformed the editing process. I read somewhere that editors use these tools like track changes in Microsoft Word to collaborate with authors, suggesting revisions, leaving comments. It's a far cry from the days of red ink all over a manuscript.
Technology has certainly streamlined the process, that's for sure, made collaboration more efficient. But even with all the digital tools available, it's still a meticulous process. Time-consuming, too. I mean, it's not unusual for a book to go through several rounds of developmental and copy editing before it's truly ready.
So we have our beautifully written, carefully edited manuscript. But it still needs to take on a visual form. Enter the designers.
Ah, yes. The artists who decide how those words will appear on the page, how the book will present itself to the world.
I never really thought much about typography before, but I recently came across this article about how the choice of font can actually impact reading comprehension.
It's true. It seems like such a small detail, but it can make a big difference.
There was this study by the University of Nottingham. They found that readers actually retained information better when the text was set in a serif font, like Times New Roman.
Compared to a sans serif font, like Arial. Interesting, right?
So much thought goes into those decisions. It's not just about readability, though. It's about creating a visual aesthetic that matches the book's content, its genre.
Absolutely. you wouldn't use the same font for a literary novel as you would for, a contemporary thriller.
Right. And then there's the page layout itself, finding that balance between text and white space.
Making sure the page isn't too cluttered, too overwhelming, giving the reader's eyes a place to rest.
That's like visual breathing room.
Exactly. And of course, we can't forget about the cover design.
Arguably the most important visual element of all. It's the book's first impression.
It's a delicate balance. Cover design. Art meets marketing. It has to be visually appealing, of course, but it also has to be genre appropriate, intriguing enough to make someone want to pick it up and learn more.
Like a visual synopsis, almost. Hinting at the themes, the tone, without giving too much away.
Precisely. And with so many books being sold online these days, the cover has become even more crucial. Think about how many books you scroll through on Amazon, on Goodreads.
It has to stand out, grab your attention from a sea of thumbnails.
And designers have to consider how that cover will look, both as a physical object and as a tiny digital image.
Talk about pressure. So we have our beautifully written, meticulously edited, and now visually stunning manuscript. But it's still, you know, just a collection of digital files. How do we bridge that gap? How do we get from digital text to a tangible book you can hold in your hands?
That, my friend, is where we enter the realm of paper and ink, the raw materials that truly bring a book to life. And it's a surprisingly complex world.
I have to admit, I'd never given much thought to the type of paper used in a book. But then I stumbled upon this article about how paper choice can actually impact the reader's enjoyment.
Oh, it absolutely can. It's subtle, but it's there.
The weight, the texture, even the color of the paper. It all feeds into how we experience the text, the story.
It's like choosing the right frame for a painting. The paper acts as a backdrop for the words, either enhancing or detracting from the overall aesthetic. And it's not just about aesthetics either. Practicality comes into play.
Right. Different papers have different strengths, different uses.
Exactly. Lightweight paper can make a book more affordable to ship, which is important when you're printing large quantities. But then you have to consider durability. You want a book to hold up over time, especially if it's something you'll read and reread.
Makes sense. You don't want pages falling out after a few reads. And what about ink? I feel like even something as seemingly simple as ink has undergone some changes in recent years.
It has. For a long time, most books were printed using petroleum-based inks. But now there's a real push toward soy-based inks, which are more sustainable, more environmentally friendly.
And I've noticed a lot more books being printed on recycled paper these days, too, which is great to see.
It's a positive trend, no doubt. Publishers are becoming more mindful of their environmental footprint. And these choices, these material choices, often tie into a book's overall cost, its perceived value.
Oh, that's interesting. How so?
Well, using high-quality, sustainable materials usually costs more, right? So that cost gets passed on to the consumer. But those higher production costs often translate into a book that feels more substantial, more durable. There's a sense of quality, of craftsmanship.
It's like the difference between a mass-produced paperback and a beautifully bound limited edition hardcover.
Exactly. The materials themselves play a role in how we perceive and value a book. And speaking of transforming raw materials into a finished product, well, that brings us to the printing and binding processes, where those carefully chosen papers and inks come together to create the physical book we know and love.
And that, I have a feeling, is a whole other fascinating world to explore.
Oh, it is. It's where engineering meets artistry. And it's a process that's both intricate and, dare I say, magical. Welcome back. Now, last we left off, we were talking about the magic of turning those raw materials, those carefully chosen papers and inks, into an actual physical book.
Right. And we touched upon the world of printing and binding, but I have a feeling there's so much more to uncover there.
Oh, there is. It's a fascinating process. But before we dive into all that, we need to talk about how those finished books actually get out into the world, you know?
Right, because a book sitting in a warehouse doesn't do anyone much good.
Exactly. So today we're stepping into the realm of distribution and shipping, the unsung heroes of the book world, really.
The folks who make sure those books travel from the printing press to warehouses to bookstores, libraries, and ultimately to our doorsteps.
It's quite the logistical ballet, you know?
A carefully choreographed dance with so many moving parts.
Warehouses, trucks, planes, delivery vans. It's a whole intricate network.
So paint us a picture. What happens in those massive book warehouses?
Well, imagine, you know, rows upon rows of shelves.
Stacked high with books of all shapes and sizes, like a giant library, almost.
You're not far off. It's like the beating heart of the whole book distribution system, constantly receiving new shipments, fulfilling orders, keeping track of everything.
So let's say I order a book online. What happens behind the scenes to get that book from the warehouse to my doorstep? Walk us through it.
All right, so picture this. Your order pings in. That signal goes straight to the warehouse.
And I bet they use those handheld scanners to locate the book among, what, millions of others?
Exactly. Like magic wands, those scanners, instantly identifying the location, guiding the worker to the right shelf. Technology has really transformed the whole process, hasn't it?
Streamlined it, for sure. Made things so much quicker and more efficient.
Absolutely. Okay, so your book's been located. Now it gets picked, carefully packaged for its journey.
And I imagine the packaging depends on the type of book, right? You wouldn't pack a delicate hardcover the same way you'd pack a paperback.
You're absolutely right. Those special editions, the hardcovers, they get the VIP treatment, sturdy boxes, extra padding, you know, all the bells and whistles to make sure they arrive in pristine condition.
No bumps, no scratches. Makes sense.
Now, once a book's all snug and secure in its package, it's handed off to the shipping company.
And these shipping companies, they're like the arteries of the book world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Constantly transporting books all over the country, all over the world.
That's a great way to put it. They have these massive networks of trucks, planes, trains, and delivery vans using these sophisticated systems to optimize routes, track shipments in real time. I mean, it's really impressive.
I bet they take into account all sorts of factors. Distance, traffic, weather, even delivery deadlines.
That's absolutely. It's a complex logistical dance for sure.
Yeah.
And sometimes they even partner with these third-party services to handle that last mile of delivery. You know, the part where the book actually gets to your doorstep.
Right. Those delivery drivers who brave traffic and bad weather to make sure we get our books, they deserve a shout out.
They do. They're a vital part of the whole process. But, you know, we can't talk about book distribution without mentioning the elephant in the room. Or rather, the two elephants. E-commerce and print on demand.
Yes. Yeah. The game changers, the disruptors.
Exactly. They've revolutionized the way we buy and sell books. I mean, think about online retailers like Amazon.
With their massive reach, their global distribution networks.
You can order a book from practically anywhere in the world and have it delivered to your door in a matter of days, sometimes even hours.
It's amazing, the speed and efficiency.
It is. And then you have print on demand, which has been a real boon for independent authors, for niche publishers. Remind me, how does that work again?
Well, with print on demand, a book isn't actually printed until someone orders it. So no need to print thousands of copies up front, hoping they'll sell.
Right, right. So it minimizes waste, reduces storage costs, and authors can even offer customized editions. It's a win-win, really.
It is. So whether a book is being shipped from a traditional warehouse or printed on demand, the end goal is the same. To get that book into a reader's hands.
Precisely. But of course, just getting the book out there isn't enough. You have to make sure people actually know about it.
Yes. Enter the world of marketing.
The art of capturing attention, generating buzz, convincing people to pick up that book and dive in.
So what are some of the tricks of the trade? What do publishers do to market books in today's world?
Well, they've got a whole arsenal of strategies, you know, blending those tried and true methods with some cutting edge digital tactics.
Like what? Give us some examples.
Well, there's the classic offer tour, for starters.
Always a favorite. Imagine a beloved author traveling from city to city, meeting readers, signing books. It's like a rock concert, but for books.
Exactly. It creates such a buzz, such a sense of community. And of course, you can't forget social media.
Yes, social media. A megaphone for the modern age.
It's an essential tool, really. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, even TikTok these days. They use it to share updates, post visuals, run contests, engage with readers directly.
And they often partner with those book bloggers, reviewers, those influencers with massive followings.
Right. It's like a word of mouth recommendation, but amplified a thousandfold.
And then
email marketing.
Yes. Those curated reading lists delivered straight to our inboxes.
A great way to keep readers engaged, informed about new releases, special promotions, you know. And let's not forget about online advertising.
Targeting specific readers based on their interests, their reading habits. So if I'm constantly buying mystery novels, I'm probably going to start seeing a lot of ads for new mysteries popping up everywhere.
Exactly. And the great thing about online advertising is that you can track its effectiveness, see what's working, what's not.
Real-time feedback, basically.
You got it. And speaking of data, Publishers also use these sophisticated analytics tools to gather insights about reader preferences, you know, buying habits, market trends. It's like having a crystal ball, almost.
Predicting what's going to be popular, how to reach the right readers. Fascinating. But even with all these digital advances, brick-and-mortar bookstores still hold a special place in our hearts, don't they?
They do. There's something magical about browsing a bookstore, isn't there? The smell of books, the quiet hum of conversation, the serendipitous discoveries.
It's an experience you just can't replicate online.
You're right, and bookstores often host author events, book signings, reading groups, which really helps foster a sense of community.
Bringing book lovers together.
Exactly. And publishers often partner with bookstores, you know, to offer exclusive promotions, signed copies.
It's a win-win for everyone involved. But sometimes they even think outside the traditional book world, partnering with industries you wouldn't expect.
Oh, like what?
Well, say a book is being adapted into a movie.
Ah, I see.
They might partner with the film studio to create special tie-in editions or launch a joint marketing campaign.
Capitalize on that buzz, that excitement.
Exactly. Or they might team up with a brand to create themed merchandise. I've seen cookbooks released alongside lines of kitchenware, young adult novels promoted with clothing retailers.
It's all about getting creative, reaching new audiences.
Thinking outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, all these marketing efforts, all these strategies and partnerships, they're all geared toward one thing.
The reader.
That moment when someone picks up a book and gets lost in its world. That's where the magic truly happens.
It is. And that, my friend, is what we're going to explore next. The reader's experience. The profound impact that books can have, not just on individuals, but on society as a whole.
Welcome back. You know, it's amazing to think about all the steps we've covered, all the work that goes into bringing a book to life.
From that initial spark of an idea all the way to those strategic marketing campaigns.
It's quite the journey. But now, let's shift gears a bit.
Right. We've explored the how. Now it's time to delve into the why.
Exactly. Why do books matter so much? Why do we keep coming back to them century after century?
It's a question worth pondering. And I think part of the answer lies in their ability to, well, transcend time, to act as these cultural time capsules.
Oh, absolutely. Preserving ideas, stories, ways of life, allowing us to connect with the past in such a tangible way.
I was just reading a historical novel set in Victorian England, and I felt like I was transported back in time. I could almost smell the coal smoke, hear the click-clop of horses on cobblestone streets.
That's the power of a well-written book, isn't it? To immerse us in another world. And it's not just about the past, though. Books also help us understand the present. They provide context for current events, offer different perspectives on the challenges we face today.
They challenge our assumptions, make us think critically about the world around us.
And sometimes, they even spark social change.
Think about books like Uncle Tom's Cabin, which exposed the horrors of slavery, or Silent Spring, which raised awareness about the dangers of pesticides.
Those books weren't just stories. They were catalysts for action, for change.
Exactly. They ignited conversations, empowered people to speak out against injustice. And, you know, even books that aren't explicitly political can have a profound social impact.
Right. They can shape our values, our beliefs, our behavior.
Children's books, for example. Think about the lessons they teach about empathy, kindness, resilience. They plant these seeds that can grow into a more compassionate, more understanding society.
I remember reading The Giving Tree as a kid. It had such a profound effect on me. It taught me about the power of selfless love.
It's amazing how certain books stay with us long after we've closed the last page. And that's another thing I love about books. They foster a sense of community.
Absolutely. Think about book clubs. Bringing people together to discuss their thoughts, their interpretations. Or literary festivals. Celebrating authors, stories, the sheer joy of reading.
In a world that's increasingly digital, increasingly fast-paced, books offer this sanctuary for focused thought, for quiet reflection.
It's like hitting the pause button, giving our brains a chance to slow down, to truly engage with ideas.
It's a mental detox, almost. And, you know, there's actual scientific evidence to support the benefits of reading.
Oh, right. Studies have shown that reading can reduce stress, improve sleep quality, even enhance cognitive function.
It's like a workout for your brain, and we all need that, don't we? Especially in today's world. So as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of books, I'm left with a sense of, well, awe, I guess.
Me too. It's incredible to think about the journey a book takes, the countless hands it passes through, the impact it has along the way.
From the writer pouring their heart onto the page to the reader discovering those words, connecting with those stories, it's a truly magical process.
And it's a process that reminds us of the power of human connection, of the enduring importance of storytelling. So next time you pick up a book, take a moment to appreciate the intricate web of connections that made that experience possible.
Think about the authors, the editors, the designers, the printers, the distributors, the booksellers, all those people who played a role in bringing that book to life.
And remember, the journey doesn't end when you close the book. Those ideas, those emotions, they stay with you, shaping your thoughts, your actions, your very being.
So keep those pages turning, dear listeners, and may your reading journeys be filled with wonder, discovery, and endless possibilities.